We'll continue this morning in Hebrews chapter 11. We have been in Hebrews 11 for a while. We have studied Abraham and the patriarchs, how they endured to the end, walking by faith, looking to God and His Word, and looking for a better city, a better country. And this morning we will be looking at Moses and possibly the generation after Moses that went into the Promised Land. We will probably finish up Hebrews 11 next week because he has a lot more to say about Abraham and Moses than he does about the heroes of the faith that come after that. So we've covered Abraham and the patriarchs this morning. We're going to start off reading what the author has to say about Moses. So we will have Alanda to read to us Hebrews 11, verses 23 through 31.
By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents because they saw he was a proper child, and they were not afraid of the king's command. By faith, Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. Through faith, he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood, lest he that destroyed the firstborn should touch them. By faith, they passed through the Red Sea, as by dry land, which the Egyptians, essaying to do, were drowned. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell down after they were compassed about 7 days. By faith, the harlot Rahab perished not with them that believed not when she had received the spies with peace.
There we have the account of Moses and the generation after him. First of all, we will note in these verses here, the phrase by faith appears 7 times in these verses. I think the version that Alanda was reading out of, once or twice it said of faith, but it's the same word each time, by faith. So obviously the subject is Moses living by faith, and then the generation after him living by faith. All right, so the major theme of this section is God's people overcoming fear and temptation by faith. Overcoming fear and temptation by faith. And I want to read something Rush Dooney has to say about this. Charles, will you look up for us Revelation 21, verse 8, and read that to us? Because he is talking about Revelation 21, verse 8 in this, even though it does apply directly to what we're studying. And I think he has some real nice insights on this.
Okay. But as for the cowardly, the faithless, the detestable, as for murderers, the sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars, their portion will be in the lake that burns with fire and sulfur, which is the second death.
Okay, he starts out by saying the cowardly, and then other classes of people. But the cowardly will end up in hell. That's virtually what he's saying. Now, in the King James Version, which Rush Dooney uses, the word is fearful. But fearful and cowardly are not really the same things. I imagine all the men that went into battle in World War II were fearful, but they weren't all cowards. So I think that the ESV actually has the better translation of being cowardly instead of fearful. All right, he titles this little devotion here, which is about a page, as fearfulness. Or as the ESV says, the cowardly. He says, who are the reprobates? This is a question we need to ask, because the Bible tells us who they are in Revelation 21:8. You will find some obviously bad characters on the list. The abominable, murderers, whoremongers, and others who obviously belong there. But the first two who head the list are very important. They are the fearful, or the cowardly, and the unbelieving. And they are essentially one and the same. To be fearful means to distrust God's promises and to put more stock in what the world promises and threatens than in what God promises and threatens with us. To be fearful means to believe in man and his power and to disbelieve in God and his power. It says we are a fearful and unbelieving generation. He wrote this, I think, probably in the early 70s. We are always fearful where we should not be and indifferent to God and his power and word. We are summoned by all of Scripture to believe in the Lord. To believe means to say amen to, or to put our whole life on the line in terms of God's word. To believe means that our waking and sleeping, our eating and drinking, our work, rest, worship, and play, the whole of our lives, in brief, is governed by the Lord and his word. If we disbelieve God, we believe in man and this world, and our lives are governed by man and the fear of man. Every man has a faith in himself, in the state, in other men, but in something. If a man's faith is in anything other than the Lord, he will be fearful and unbelieving in the eyes of God. Fearful of men because he does not believe in the Lord. To be fearless in the Lord does not require us to be great and powerful men, but only to believe in the great and powerful God. He is our shield and defender. That's Psalm 33:20. God therefore allows no excuses for fearfulness. Beware lest you make excuses. So beware lest you make excuses. There is no excuse to disobey God. If anybody ever had an excuse, it would be some of these characters, Christian characters, men and women, that we find in Hebrews chapter 11. They could have easily made excuses. I'm not going to obey God because of this or that. They were not cowards. And that is what the problem was in this church that the author is writing to. Some of them were on the verge of becoming cowards by putting their faith in men instead of God. So I think Rush Dooney hits that right on the point. And according to the Apostle John in Revelation, cowards are going to end up in hell. So a very stern warning by the Apostle John, and a long, drawn-out warning here by the author of Hebrews. Our fear is to be in God and his promises, not in man and his threatenings. All right, any comments up to now? Steve?
Well, I think we're seeing a lot of this cowardice with so many people going along with the flow of all this BLM stuff and all this transgender, all these abominations and things. Just people just, I think it's cowardice that they just go along with it.
Run along with the world instead of what God says.
I was just thinking, the whole thing is reversed because people are fearful of men and what, opinions or virus or whatever, that most people have no fear of God.
Yeah.
They're not, God, he's not going to hold them accountable. They're not going to ever have any judgment from God. There's just no fear of God. There's fear of everything that they shouldn't be fearful of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with everything that you just brought up, I was listening to somebody and they said it's God shaking things up. It's like, a lot of shaking going on here. A lot of people in the church that shouldn't be there.
Yeah. Yep. A lot of professing believers that aren't real believers. Mm-hmm. There's a big difference in this country in the visible and the invisible church. And I guess it probably was in this church too, in the Hebrews. And God uses persecution and fear to purify His church, to peel off the unbelievers, to purify His people. And I believe that's starting to happen in this country. All right. Now, the author says in verse 23, by faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents because they saw he was a beautiful child and they were not afraid of the king's edict. Okay, Bud, will you read for us Exodus 1, 16 and 17?
When you serve as midwife to the Hebrew women and see them on the birth stool, if it is a son, you shall kill him. But if it is a daughter, she shall live. But the midwives feared God and did not do as the king of Egypt commanded them, but let the male children live.
All right, now the king had told them to kill every male child born, but they feared God more than they feared the king. All right, and then skip on over to chapter 2, verses 1 and 2.
Now a man from the house of Levi went and took as his wife a Levite woman. The woman conceived and bore a son, and when she saw that it was a fine child, she hid him 3 months. When she could hide him no longer, she took for him a basket made of bulrushes and daubed it with bitumen and pitch. She put the child in it and placed it among the reeds by the riverbank.
Now, by faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents. So his parents had faith. The author here is talking about the faith of Moses' parents. And they saw somehow he was fitting into God's plan. He was a beautiful child. This was not an ordinary child. And because of that, they hid him, not afraid of the king's edict. Moses survived. Moses shouldn't have survived if under ordinary circumstances. But by faith, his parents kept him alive. They had faith in God's plan that Moses was a child of God, that Moses was special. They feared God. God created and sustains Pharaoh. So why fear Pharaoh instead of God? They put obeying God before obeying man because they feared God more than man. And this will be a prominent theme for the rest of the chapter. The people of God fearing God and not man. And Philip Hughes comments on this verse. It says, the present verse shows that in the true spirit of the covenant, whose promises embrace believers together with their children, even in infancy, Moses was surrounded, by the pure atmosphere of faith. He was brought up in a pure atmosphere of faith. Godly parents that thought Moses fit into the plan of God. All right, any comments on Moses' parents? Okay, if not, we'll move from Moses' parents, verse 23, to verses 24 through 28, where the author talks about Moses himself. All right, now, instead of reading that out of Exodus, we're going to read Stephen's summation of Moses' life in Acts 7, I've got 20 through 29 in your notes, but I think in verse 18 is where we really need to pick up on that. This is Stephen's speech before the religious leaders, right before he got stoned.
Can I do 17?
Okay,
might be. Because 18 is in the middle of the sentence.
Okay.
Through 29?
Right.
From verse 17. But as the time of the promise was approaching, which God had assured to Abraham, the people increased and multiplied in Egypt until there arose another king over Egypt who knew nothing about Joseph. It was he who took shrewd advantage of our race and mistreated our fathers so that they would expose their infants and they would not survive. It was at this time that Moses was born, and he was lovely in the sight of God, and he was nurtured 3 months in his father's home. And after he had been set outside, Pharaoh's daughter took him away and nurtured him as her own son. Moses was educated in all the learning of the Egyptians, and he was a man of power in words and deeds. But when he was approaching the age of 40, it entered his mind to visit his brethren, the sons of Israel. And when he saw one of them being treated unjustly, he defended him and took vengeance for the oppressed by striking down the Egyptian. And he supposed that his brethren understood that God was granting them deliverance through him, but they did not understand. On the following day, he appeared to them as they were fighting together, and he tried to reconcile them in peace, saying, "Men, you are brethren. Why do you injure one another?" But the one who was injuring his neighbor pushed him away, saying, "Who made you a ruler and judge over us? You do not mean to kill me as you killed the Egyptians yesterday, do you?" At this remark, Moses fled and became an alien in the land of Midian, where he became the father of two sons.
Okay, Stephen's account, what the author is talking about here. And so in verse 24, starts out by saying, by faith, Moses, when he had grown up. So the former verse was when he was a child, even an infant, but now he's grown up. It says he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, and says, choosing rather to endure ill treatment with the people of God. Okay. Here we have Moses making a clear decision to choose God instead of the world in verses 24 and 25. And that's what all Christians are going to have to do. They're going to have to make a decisive break with the world and be on God's side, but choose God instead of the world. In James 4, chapter 4, verse 4, James tells the people there, he says, "You adulterers, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God?" He calls them adulterers. They're in bed with the world, as J. Adams would say. They are in bed with the world. They have made a decision, or at least some of them had, that they were going to love the world instead of the Father. And therefore, James rightly calls them adulterers. So, Moses has made the decision here to be God's friend. Friendship with God and no friendship with the world. He made a decision. He's going to stick with it. And that's what we need to do. We need to go ahead and make that decision, that we're going to do what God tells us to do and not run along with the world. And we see in verse 26, I think you got 25 down there, but it should be verse 26, that it was an informed decision. He made a decisive decision, and it was an informed decision. He considered the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt. So he sat down and counted the cost, you might say. He considered it. He looked at all the angles. And he says, "No, I'm going to be with God. I'm not going to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin. My decision is I'm going to fear God and keep His commandments." And we are commanded to sit down and count the cost. So the passing pleasures of sin, we got to remember, they are passing pleasures. They're fleeting. They won't last very long, whereas our being with God will last forever. So it was an informed decision. And he was looking ahead to a better country, to God's reward in verse 26. It says at the end, he was looking to the reward. That is how we endured. That's how Moses endured. That's how other people in this chapter endured. They were looking forward. They were always looking forward. New American Standard says he was looking to the reward, which is a pretty good translation of the verb, was looking. It's in the imperfect tense. It could be translated as kept looking. It wasn't just like he said one time, ah, there's a big reward out there. I'm going to go and do what I'm supposed to do. No, he kept looking. He always had that in front of him, looking at him. That was always his incentive. Yes, Steve?
And I think that's just a picture of maturity, which is delayed gratification. That's a real sign of maturity. So there was a mature faith there that was willing to wait for that despite the moment.
God's people are a waiting period. Wait on the Lord. How many times do we see that? Good point. Okay, nice. In verse 27, we see that he endured through faith in God. By faith, he left Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. Now, a lot of people think that the Exodus account showed that he feared the wrath of the king. He left Egypt fearing the wrath of the king. The only reason he feared the wrath of the king was because he knew he was part of God's plan and he wanted to fulfill what God had to say. He wasn't necessarily scared of Pharaoh. He returned 40 years later right in front of Pharaoh, right to his face, and said, I've got a message of you from God. You let my people go. So his fear was not directly related to the king's wrath. His fear was that he might not make it to fulfilling God's purpose. So he endured as seeing him who is invisible or unseen. Even though he couldn't see God, he knew that God was his exceedingly great reward. Okay? And the next one, he says, he did not fear a man. Verse 27 says he didn't fear the wrath of the king. I want to read Hughes' comment on this. He had a good insight on this. In his commentary on the Hebrews, which is a very good commentary, he says, how then is a statement here that Moses was not afraid of Pharaoh's anger? How is that compatible with the declaration of Exodus 2:14 that he was afraid and fled from Pharaoh? And this is just reiterating what I said. The answer to this question is that it was not personal fear of Pharaoh, but of the awareness of his destiny as a deliverer of the covenant people that caused him to take flight. Had he remained at the juncture, this destiny would have been thwarted, humanly speaking, by his execution. And so, impelled by faith in the divine purpose for his life, Moses took refuge in Midian. That he was a man of courage rather than of fear is shown by the risk he took in coming to help his compatriots who were being ill-treated and the boldness of his return at God's command after the lapse of 40 years to withstand the Egyptian king face to face and to demand the release of his people.
Those were two widely separate events.
Yeah.
So, because verse 27, the context is leaving, unless I'm wrong, maybe I'm wrong, but on verse 27, I thought verse 27 is speaking about when he, by the Spirit of God, was leading the people out of Egypt.
That's a commonly held view.
Okay, so
but,
is that not the case here? I mean, to me that would make perfect sense.
It could be. I lean toward what I just taught, okay. But it could be. There are some very able commentators that say that this is the him leading the people 40 years later out of Egypt. The better commentators don't hold to that view.
Because to me, of course I'm looking at it as a lawyer, but to me it's a little bit of a weak argument, I think, to argue what I've heard commentators say.
Yeah.
But anyway, to me the other would make more sense.
As soon as you get to verse 28, it immediately is referencing the Exodus.
Yeah, I mean, but if 27 does refer to the earlier part, the only other explanation I could see, again, it's not a real strong one, but in the Greek, it's the verb based on phobos, which I don't know if that can, to me, I don't recall from my Greek, but it seems to me that's a higher level fear.
Yeah, I don't think there.
You know, so he obviously wouldn't have been.
I don't think Moses had as much phobos in leaving that second time as the king did. I think the king was more afraid than Moses.
Well, yeah, that second time, but the original one after he's killed the Egyptian.
Yeah.
To me, it makes perfect sense that he was very much afraid of the wrath of the king. But anyway.
Yeah, he states that the wrath, the fear would not be because of him personally. Doing anything personally to him, but of him thwarting the plan of God by cutting Moses off. Moses saw himself as fitting into the plan of God. And that's what he was fearful of, is not doing that. That's according to Hughes. But on the surface, it does look like he did fear the king, feared Pharaoh.
Is what they ask when we
yeah.
A lot of these things that he says, I question a few things when we get to the next verse or two. There's going to be a couple of other things that are a little controversial in those too.
Yeah, I don't think we're talking about the Exodus until 28-29.
Yeah,
I think that verse is whenever he left after he killed the Egyptian.
All right, and then when we get to verse 28, he followed God's instructions, trusting in God's promises, even though he did not understand their meaning. It says, by faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of the blood so that he who destroyed the firstborn would not touch them. You know, the people were saying, what in the world are we doing, Moses? Stuff doesn't make any sense that we're doing. But Moses says, Moses was acting on the bare word of God. God told him to do it, so he did it. He says, if you don't do it, your firstborn is going to be killed. Okay, now, one that seems to be troubling is verse 29. It says, by faith, they passed through the Red Sea as though they were passing through dry land. And the Egyptians, when they attempted it, were drowned. Okay. I don't think the Hebrews had a whole lot of faith that passed through that wall of water. All right, let's read the account in Exodus 14. And listen carefully, because there's a lot of little things in here that you may not think important that turn out to be fairly important in interpreting this verse.
What verse is
it? Okay, it's going to be 14. One through... Let's go through 11 to begin with. 12.
Now the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel that they turn and camp before Pi-Hahiroth, between Migdol and the sea, opposite Baal Zephon. You shall camp before it by the sea. For Pharaoh will say of the children of Israel, 'They are bewildered by the land, and the wilderness has closed them in.' Then I will harden Pharaoh's heart, so that he will pursue them, and I will gain honor over Pharaoh and over all his army, that the Egyptians may know that I am the Lord." And they did so. Now it was told the king of Egypt that the people had fled, and the heart of Pharaoh and his servants was turned against the people. And they said, "Why have we done this, that we have let Israel go from serving us?" So he made ready his chariot and took his people with him. Also he took 600 choice chariots and all the chariots of Egypt with captains over every one of them. And the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he pursued the children of Israel. And the children of Israel went out with boldness. So the Egyptians pursued them, all the horses and chariots of Pharaoh, his horsemen and his army, and overtook them, camping by the sea beside Pi-Hahiroth before Baal Zephon. Then Pharaoh drew near. The children of Israel lifted their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them. So they were very afraid, and the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. Then they said to Moses, "Because there were no graves in Egypt, have you taken us away to die in the wilderness? Why have you so dealt with us to bring us up out of Egypt? Is this not the word that we told you in Egypt, saying, 'Let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians'? For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness."
Okay. Every commentator I read assumes that Pharaoh was going out with the intent to kill the Hebrews. Does everybody agree with that?
Well, I don't know, but they were his cattle. I mean, he was a good businessman. He would kill them. He'd just bring them back.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Pharaoh was a little smarter than to go out and kill his labor force.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
First of all, it cost a lot of money to put your army together like he did. Okay. Now, second of all, the commentators seem to think that the people were convinced they were going to be killed. And so, the decision that they were facing, were we going to be destroyed by the Egyptians, or are we going to possibly be destroyed by water? Now, to me, that doesn't show a whole lot of faith. I think the Hebrews were smart enough to realize that Pharaoh was not going to kill them. He wanted them back. And a lot of them wanted to go back. How many times do we read in Exodus and Numbers? We want to go back. We had it nice there. I think the dilemma here was whether these Hebrews wanted to go home or whether they wanted to continue. Did they want to go back to the world or did they want to go God's way? By faith, they chose God's way. They could have just gone up to the Egyptians and say, "Okay, take us home." Any questions, comments on that? Any other insights? It's again, picking the way of the world or the way of God.
Well, you know, we're looking at these people as a covenant group. You know, and what came to my mind as we entered this discussion was through the kings. At the time, you know, one says, you know, this king, these people, you know, but, you know, Israel as a nation showed a lot of unfaithfulness, but we know there was individuals. And even in this group, you had Joshua and Caleb.
Yeah.
And there was probably many others as well. Maybe not the majority, But there were others, certainly in this group of million people or plus, that did have faith. You know, so I think in general it could be said again as a covenant group that there was faith there, even though there was a lot of unbelief as well.
Yeah.
That's one way I see it.
Well, the author does say that there was faith there. Yeah. I just think the wrong dichotomy is normally
different degrees of that.
Yeah.
Weak faith, strong faith.
Mm-hmm. But even mustard seed faith, yeah. Jesus later said that.
They were definitely wishy-washy.
Well, yeah, the Exodus.
I'm far, but I don't know where I am or not. You know.
When I started studying this verse, I said, "Where is the faith? I don't see any faith." But anyway,
It says in verse 10 back there in Exodus that they were frightened. Must have been a really frightening thing. They were, except for all the water, they were between a rock and a hard spot. They were right up against the sea, and this whole army comes up.
Well, even if it would be illogical for Pharaoh to kill his labor force, he still was pursuing them as a warrior, right? He called out the chariots, and they were all armed, so they were coming out dressed for battle,
yeah.
to pursue the Egyptians. So I think the threat of death from them was there.
Yeah, the reason I took the stand I did was because I would think that would be the most reasonable way they were walking by faith, was the way I described. The choice between going home and doing it their way or going through the Red Sea and doing it God's way.
You know, Steve brought up an interesting point about the covenant there, because it says by faith they passed. So as a covenant, they were the covenanted people there. I was thinking, I don't know what the Greek word there is, but Moses would be the federal head, and he would be the one with the really strong faith.
Yeah, that solidarity there.
Right.
Yeah. That's a good point there.
I think there's also a point, too, that, I mean, we've read this account so many times growing up. You know, it's not the same as if we were the Israelites standing in front of all this water, and all of a sudden you see this whole path, and we don't really know what it looked like, but they've never heard of this happening. They've never seen anything happening. How do they know that 10 steps in, the water's going to crush them? I mean, they've never witnessed anything like this. So I'm sure, even if they saw that as the best of the two options, it was still something that they had to say. They had faith that God would continue to keep that path open until they were all safely across.
Well, once they saw the water go up, the Egyptians had faith they were going to be able to catch it.
Yeah. One thing interesting to note on 29, too, the saved people, the ones who crossed through, and the people that were damned, the ones that didn't make it, the same water. The same water saved some and damned, destroyed the others. Okay, I believe that's a good place for us to stop today. Next Sunday, I will go to the next generation and see how they walk by faith. And Bud, I'll ask you to close for us today.